world. Let's not forget that Lucifer was a fallen angel. I imagine he was quite handsome. If the role fits.
Mephistopheles shrugged.
Anyway, it's always interesting to see you again, Mr. Cresswell. But if you'll excuse us, I need to speak with your...
He purposely stared down at my empty ring finger.
Friend, is it?
Mephistopheles didn't smile again, but satisfaction oozed off him when Thomas clenched his jaw.
Don't worry. I'll return her to you shortly. If she cares to return, that is.
Thomas stood there, fingers tapping his sides. I wasn't sure if he was waiting for my refusal, or considering how angry Uncle would be if he discovered I'd wandered off unchaperoned with someone he didn't approve of. I glanced at Mephistopheles and bit my lip. I didn't wish to abandon Thomas, but something large must have happened for the ringmaster to want to talk before our scheduled meeting. I took a step in his direction, then stopped. Thomas inhaled deeply.
If I come across your uncle, I'll tell him you needed a bit more time to get ready. Meet me outside your cabin in half an hour.
Thomas, I made to reach for him, but dropped my arm. Thank you.
Thanking me is unnecessary.
He leaned in and kissed my cheek, unconcerned with our scowling audience.
You are always free to do as you please. Even if you choose to follow a strange man in a gaudy suit into the bowels of a steam cruiser while someone in his show is murdering women.
Delight flashed in his eyes when the ringmaster exhaled loudly.
I'll see you in a bit. If my suit is so gaudy, then why are you staring at it like it's your one true love?
Thomas, I warned, do not comment on his jacket. He missed his evening nap and is cranky.
Yes, well, there was only one spot available in the nursery, and I thought Mr. Cresswell should take it.
I hid my smile as Thomas stared down the ringmaster like he was a reanimated corpse.
Miss Wadsworth,
Mephistopheles asked, tone lacking any decorum or patience.
Shall we?
He offered his arm, but I ignored it and hauled off toward the promenade deck without assistance. I was already in a rotten mood, thanks to the tarot reading, and now the sudden appearance of Mephistopheles, the devil himself, turned my disposition even more sour. Confused over my feelings, indeed. I'd show Andreas how faulty his cards were. Once we made it to the end of the deck, free from passengers and performers alike, I whirled on him. You're trying to work, Thomas, and it's not fair to me. When I agreed to help you, it was also supposed to benefit me, remember? This, I motioned between us, is not beneficial. What is so important that you require my assistance this moment? You seem to be having fun with Gian and Anisha, not searching for me.
Not here.
Mephistopheles pointed toward the corridor leading a few floors below. I tried to hide my shiver as we entered the dimly lit hall and walked swiftly down the flight of narrow stairs. Our footsteps echoed along the metal stairs, alerting anyone below of our arrival. I wanted to ask about the playing cards and how cartomancy might play into the killings, but didn't wish to do so when we were so far from other people. We came to the end of the stairwell, and I was amazed when it opened into a vast storage space that must have taken up at least a quarter of the entire hull. Cage after cage of iron bars and exotic animals lined each side of the cavernous room. Monkeys and tigers, lions, elephants, and wolves whiter than snow. I paused near the zebras, admiring their contrasting colors. Well, I faced the ringmaster, hands on my hips. What urgent matter do you have? Standing there alone with him, I tried not to think about last evening, his hands on my waist, laughing like I was some other person as he twirled me around. How free I'd felt for a moment.
I've noticed you haven't given Liza the letter yet.
He ran his gloved hands down the side of one cage, inspecting them before brushing them off.
Would you prefer if I did it? Then you might act as if your hands aren't stained in the nastiness of the matter.
Is this why you wanted to talk? I bristled at his tone. How is opening someone's eyes to the truth a terrible thing? He stopped walking down the line of cages, facing me. Sometimes we choose not to see things we know are true, simply because we wish to keep the fantasy of what could have been alive. To see the realness of a thing, well, sometimes that removes hope. An unfortunate side effect. As a scientist, you must know that. You cannot always remove a tumor without taking a bit of the surrounding healthy tissues, can you? I crossed my arms over my chest.
No, I do not require your assistance, and I don't wish to wax poetic on how speaking the truth is like removing a tumor or any other such nonsense. Was there anything else you needed, or did you only intend to irritate me?
You anger rather quickly, he said. I enjoy chaos, remember? I like studying reactions. You weren't so quick to be rid of me last night.
A flush crept along my skin. Any other parting words of wisdom, or might I go back to the carnival?
Mephistopheles marched up to the lion's cage, a muscle in his jaw twitching in annoyance. Apologies for interrupting your romantic evening, Miss Wadsworth. But I thought you might want to see what I discovered before I alert the overbearing captain.
He jerked his chin toward the back of the cage. Judging from the strong, earthy scent hanging in the air, the hay had been freshly changed. I doubted he'd dragged me down here to see that. So I carefully leaned closer and jerked back. There were splatters of blood on the floor of the cage. But that couldn't be right. I inhaled deeply and exhaled. There was a logical explanation waiting. I simply needed to think like a scientist.
Don't you feed the lions fresh meat? I asked. My brain refused to acknowledge what my eyes were reporting as truth, the basis for all good illusions. I'm sure it's simply...
The severed limb that's to blame?
He pointed to something I'd not noticed at first. It was stiff and protruding from the hay. I closed my eyes briefly and cursed. A pale arm gnawed to the bone at one end. Unless it was a very detailed prop for the carnival, it was all too real. No illusion or trick.
Yes, I'm quite sure that does explain all the blood. How silly of me to require your assistance with sorting that out.
I shot him an irritated look. Don't be cross with me. I'm not the one trying to destroy your carnival. Perhaps you should have thought of these consequences before carrying on a flirtation with a married woman.
My carnival is in peril, and there's a severed arm in front of you. Yet you'd like to discuss my sleeping arrangements?
When they might be the cause of said issues? Yes. I pushed past him, noting the shock on his face, and edged around the back of the cage, trying to get a better view of the arm. With the freshly laid hay, it was difficult to tell if someone had been killed in the cage, or if the arm had simply been tossed in after.
You need to have the lion removed from there immediately, I said. This whole cage needs to be secured and scoured for clues.
I inspected the lion. It was impossible to tell how much of the body he'd consumed. Perhaps it was just the one arm, meant to distract us. The large cat lazily washed himself, licking his paws, then dragging them behind his ears in a contented way only a full belly could provide. My own stomach flipped at the implication of such actions. Tonight had been so close to ending without another death.
Shouldn't this animal be with the others for the show?
Mephistopheles stepped closer.
It appears he's too full to be of use, which is probably why he was left behind.
That means this was deposited prior to the show.
I swallowed my revulsion down. I could not allow my emotions to surface now. Perhaps not ever. I'd witnessed a lot in my uncle's laboratory, cruelty almost too violent to be believed. But this was an entirely new level of horrific. To toss someone to an animal to feed upon? It was monstrous.
You need to summon my uncle, I added, noting Mephistopheles hadn't yet moved.
And Thomas, we need them. Someone is dead. Whoever did this is out to ruin your show. You better hope we can prove it's Cassie and her husband, or you might be the one held responsible.
That is your best deduction?
Mephistopheles crossed his arms and scowled. It was hardly the sort of reaction I expected from anyone who'd stumbled across a dismembered piece of a body. If he was free of guilt, he was doing a terrible job of proving it.
Cassie and I, handsome though we might be together, were never lovers. She wanted to, but I declined. Mixing business with pleasure is never a good idea. Though I cannot tell if you're simply curious for your own reasons. Perhaps you're jealous.
Are you entirely mad? You wish I were jealous.
He seemed to think on it.
Yes, actually, I do. Regardless of that, if I wanted to involve your uncle or that arrogant assistant of his immediately, I would have done so. What I want is for you to investigate first. Then I will fetch those two. I need discretion. The carnival cannot keep withstanding these blows. I'm doing everything I can to keep the acts going, to distract patrons. But even I cannot produce miracles. I need you to help me.
Thomas is my partner, I argued. We each have skills that complement the others.
And? Are you incapable of simply looking at something without either of them?
We stared at each other, each holding our ground for an exaggerated moment. It was a battle of wills. And if I was selfish, I'd not surrender simply to spite him. Since there was a slain person involved, I took the higher ground.
Fine, I spat, but someone needs to get that lion out of the cage now. I cannot properly investigate the scene and worry about being mauled by that beast.
Fine,
Mephistopheles echoed, brushing past me and snatching the ring of keys from a hook on the wall.
Glad to see there are things you're able to do without assistance.
He stuck the key in the lock and yanked the door open with a screech that made the big cat growl, low and dangerous. Apparently he wasn't as full and docile as I'd thought.
What are you doing?
I asked. Mephistopheles swiped a leash from the inside of the cage and held it up as if it were the most obvious thing in the world.
Removing the lion from the cage like you asked. Have you been drinking the green fairy again this evening? I thought that was our special thing.
Why are you the one getting the lion? I ground out. Shouldn't you fetch an expert?
With a disgusted grunt, the ringmaster turned his back on me and marched toward the lion. Now that I was looking closely, I could see bits of blood stained around its pale muzzle and fleshy parts near its whiskers. Mephistopheles either didn't notice the gore or pretended it wasn't there as he made his way toward the animal. I didn't know whether to be impressed or horrified as the large cat slowly put his paw down and eyed the intruder. No matter how well trained the lion was, there was a part of him that would forever remain wild. The intelligent gleam in his golden eyes sent goose flesh skittering along my body. The effect seemed lost on Mephistopheles entirely. He was moving a bit too boldly for his own good.
Have a care, would you? You're going to get yourself killed, I said, drifting forward. Then I'll have to sort out your blood and entrails from the victims.
If that happens, then consider it a test of your immeasurable skill.
I took a steadying breath. I will not watch this madness.
Sometimes, for the greater good,
he said over his shoulder,
it's necessary to get your hands dirty. Do you trust me, Miss Wadsworth?
Only a fool would put their faith in someone they didn't know and who prided themselves on illusions.
What on earth is that supposed to mean?
Instead of responding, Mephistopheles snapped the leash like a whip, setting the other animals chittering in their cages. My gaze fell to the severed arm once more, and I quickly looked away. The time would come soon enough to dissect that bloody fragment. I moved forward, gripping the bars to give myself something to do other than fret, as the ringmaster drew within reach of the lion. Unlike the quiet calm of the cat, my pulse was a constant roar I couldn't settle. Dealing with the dismembered arm was horrendous, but bearing witness to an animal attack would be even worse. Sensing the growing tension, the lion sniffed the air, tufted tail twitching across the blood-spattered hay behind him. He was a coil, ready to spring an attack at any moment. I clutched the bars until my knuckles ached.
Be careful, please.
I'd whispered barely loud enough for me to hear. so I was surprised when the ringmaster stumbled over a clump of hay and glanced at me. Everything happened too quickly after that. The lion, already suspicious of the masked gentleman inside the cage, sprang up from its hindquarters. Mephistopheles jumped back, but he wasn't fast enough. The lion swiped the front of his waistcoat, tearing the material with no effort. I could only imagine what those claws could do to bare flesh. If he didn't escape soon, I was going to find out. "Run!" I yelled. "Hurry!" Mephistopheles fell, scrambling backward like a crab scuttling away. Without a doubt, he was going to die. My heart pounded a battle cry. I scanned the dimly lit chamber, searching for something to use against the lion. My attention fell on a cane. Without thought, I grabbed it and raced for the side opposite Mephistopheles, running the cane across the bars, creating the most dreadful racket. In my mind, I fancied it a fabulous distraction, but reality was not my friend. The lion paid me no attention. He plodded forward, eyes never leaving his prey. "Hey!" I smacked the bars now, as if I were a cricket player. The result was a metallic clang that nearly rattled my teeth. This made the lion pause, at least. I used all my strength to hit the bars again and again, the sound so loud it refused to be ignored. Finally, the lion turned its head, annoyance plain in the twitch of its tail. Both the big cat and the ringmaster stared dully at me, as if waiting for the next bang on the rungs. "Run, you bloody fool!" Mephistopheles shook himself out of his stupor and got to his feet. He turned his back on the big cat and was nearly to the cage door when the animal whirled around and struck him a second time. I screamed, convinced I was going to see him torn limb from limb. The unexpected shrillness startled the lion. It wasn't much, but it was enough for Mephistopheles to tumble out of the cage and kick the door shut. I darted around the cage, fastened the lock, and dragged the ringmaster to safety. He cringed at my rough handling, but he didn't cry out. I had no idea if that was a good sign or not. Perhaps he'd been injured so badly he was going into shock. Corpses were one thing. Nursing a living body back to health was not my area of expertise. "Are you hurt?" I ripped my gloves off, running swift hands over the front of him, searching for any obvious wounds. His clothing was tattered in the front, but I didn't see any blood yet. "Any pain you're aware of at all? How many fingers am I holding up?" I couldn't remember much else to ask. The dead didn't usually tell me what had hurt until I cut them open and rooted around for clues. He blinked slowly from behind his signature mask, seeming to consider this. I had no idea if he was thinking about potential pain or if he was about to pass out.
"It's difficult to tell. Perhaps my back?"
He struggled to sit up, then winced. With swift medical efficiency, I propped him up against the wall and wrestled his coat and waistcoat off. I knelt beside him and tugged his cravat away in a brisk motion even I was impressed by. My bare fingers were already undoing the buttons at his collar when I paused, suddenly aware of our position and what I was doing. If anyone caught us alone down here, with his clothes half off, I'd be in a world of scandal. Mephistopheles blinked at me.
"This isn't the first time you've removed a cravat, is it?"
"It would be the first time I used it to strangle someone, though."
"So violent."
His eyes fluttered shut and he groaned. I shoved my worries aside. If anyone came down here, they'd see an injured man and someone capable of offering medical assistance, nothing more. I finished unbuttoning his shirt and pulled it open, quickly inspecting his torso for any signs of damage. There was nothing but unblemished bronze skin. I ran my eyes over him twice to be certain, ignoring the sense of wrongness at his state of undress. I shook my head. He might have internal injuries that would be more worrisome than if his flesh had been torn. Prodding his torso for tenderness might be the best thing to do, though I wasn't sure if it would hurt. "You haven't sustained any outward injuries to your person." I lifted my gaze to his. We were now very close. Too close. He stared at me, unblinking. "Perhaps you have a concussion. You appear a bit..." He toppled forward, nearly burying his head in my chest.
"Please."
The word was a plea in itself. Arms gently came around my waist.
"Please, Accept my apology.
You have nothing to apologize for. I embraced him back a moment, worried over how hard he'd hit his head. Come, let's stand up, shall we? After a wobbly attempt, I finally managed to get him on his feet. I held on to him, afraid he'd stumble back down and do more damage to his brain. I was about to offer him his jacket when he staggered into me, pressing us both into the wall as he stopped himself from falling. At this rate, it would take a lifetime to get him to a real physician. Dr. Arden had refused to leave his chambers, and I wasn't sure if there was another doctor aboard the ship. "Are you all right?" I asked. "If we're moving too fast, then you ought to sit." His hand slowly came up to cradle my face, and he leaned his forehead against mine. Clearly he was having a delusion.
"Remember."
"Remember what?"
"Our bargain, Miss Wadsworth."
He slumped against me, and I worried there was some injury to his back that I'd missed. Before I could help him stand upright again, the sound of shoes hitting the stairs two at a time reached us. My first thought was elation that someone else would be able to help with the disoriented ringmaster in my arms. But when I saw it was Thomas, who skidded around the corner and stopped short, I could have sworn my heart sank down to my toes. The ringmaster leisurely pushed himself back, attention torn between me and Thomas. His odd insistence that I remember our bargain suddenly made sense. He'd manufactured this. All of it. I gripped my fists as he stood straighter and began buttoning up his shirt, completely and utterly stable on his feet.
"Mr. Cresswell, I assure you things aren't what they appear,"
he said, not sounding at all convincing as he donned his tattered jacket. He indicated the tears.
"I was under attack, and Miss Wadsworth rescued me. It was terribly valiant on her part, and quite embarrassing on mine."
Thomas didn't so much as breathe, from what I could see, but his sharp gaze was falling all over the room, likely reconstructing the scenario in that astounding way of his. With sadness, I realized he'd looked at everything in the room, except for me. My uncle and the captain rounded the doorway a moment later with Cassie and halted.
"What on earth is going on?" the captain asked. "You have a performance to give, and this one..."
He jabbed a thumb in Cassie's direction.
"Wouldn't say what the urgency was about, only that you needed us straight away."
Mephistopheles stepped away from me and nodded toward the cage.
"Miss Wadsworth and I were investigating the mystery of the severed arm. But you're right, the show must go on. At least this murder won't be the main attraction tonight."
With that, he offered a mock bow, signaled to Cassie to follow, and disappeared up the stairs, leaving me, alone, to deal with the chaos he'd unleashed. I took a deep breath and met Uncle's furious glare. Facing the lion in its cage would be mildly less intimidating, even after its attack. "I can explain everything, Uncle." 20. A fine deduction. Animal cargo hold. RMS Etruria, 5 January, 1889.
"What in 10 hells does he mean by mystery of the severed arm?"
Captain Norwood's voice was a boom of thunder in the tense quiet. A monkey near the end of the cargo hold screeched, and I did my best not to flinch from either outburst. The captain was as temperamental as the sea he navigated.
"Tell me it's not an actual human arm."
"I'm afraid there is a human specimen in the lion's cage," I said, never imagining I'd be stringing those words together. I tore my gaze from the captain and focused on Thomas, hoping to do my best to explain to him, as well as the captain and my uncle, what had just transpired, aside from me wrapped in the arms of an undressed man. "Mephistopheles was trying to remove the lion when it attacked him," I said. "I haven't been able to fully inspect the scene yet, so I've no further details. From first glance, however, someone has changed out the hay. It's possible it was done in an attempt to tidy up the murder scene, but I won't know for certain until I'm able to get into the cage and have a proper look."
Thomas strode toward the cage and severed limb in question, his focus moving from the large cat to the gnawed arm to God only knew what. He strummed his fingers along the metal bars, the sound dulled thanks to the leather gloves he wore. The captain opened his mouth, but my uncle silenced him with a raised hand. No one ought to interrupt Thomas while he lost himself in those equations only he could see. Not for the first time did I wish to possess a fragment of that particular skill of his.
"This isn't the murder scene," he said, and I knew him enough by this point to not doubt his deduction. "This is simply where the body was left. In fact, I don't believe the rest of the body was ever here. It's likely overboard by now, or the murderer is planning on dumping it soon. Robbery or theft wasn't the motive. See the ring? This crime was either premeditated or done out of convenience."
"You seem mighty confident," the captain muttered. "Perhaps you ought to let Dr. Wadsworth speak, boy."
Thomas closed his eyes, and I could only imagine the sort of things he might be stopping himself from saying aloud. It was incredible, truly, that he'd harnessed himself. A breath later, he pulled his shoulders back and affected a tone that brooked no arguments to his authority on the matter. Despite the current circumstances, I couldn't help but feel a sense of pride. Thomas was magnificent when he used his talents on a case, his confidence well earned. He was maturing from the arrogant young man I'd met last summer.
"Thomas," Uncle asked, "care to elaborate for the captain?"
He nodded.
"Note the shade of the blood smear on the padlock and the bit of rust color on the keys." "Get on with it then," the captain said. Clearly he was in no mood for pleasantries this evening. "Why should I care about the color of blood?" "Mephistopheles wasn't bleeding, so the smearing on the padlock and the keys did not come from him."
Thomas paused a moment and walked around the cage, but I swore I heard an accusation in the silence.
"From that alone, it's safe to assume that the blood is either the murderer's or victim's," he continued.
His tone was professional, cool. Perhaps I'd imagined the tinge of agitation.
"It's dark, indicating it wasn't fresh when it was transferred to the lock. I imagine it was almost dried when the murderer touched those things. If this had been the scene of the crime, then there would be blood splatter and massive stains present on the floor. A limb was removed from a person. It would have been a nasty affair. Even with the straw changed, there would be blood on the floors, walls, and ceiling. Have you been to a slaughterhouse, Captain? Messy business, that is. As for the ring, if that was the motive behind the attack, then that would have been the first thing to go." "Maybe he couldn't get it off her finger," the captain said.
"Then he would have cut it off," I said, earning a disgusted look from the man, as if I were the one who'd shorn the arm off. "And it's not a woman's arm. Our victim is male, and the ring is a wedding band." Thomas wound his way between each cage, kicking stray bits of hay as he went. He knelt down, then gazed up, searching the ceiling for blood splatter, I assumed. I followed where his attention landed, and blinked. A torn bit of cobalt fabric was caught on something in the low ceiling. It appeared to be silk. I squinted and just made out the outline of a panel. An idea clicked at once. "Where does that access panel lead, Captain?"
"It's simply a maintenance portal connecting this room to the crew corridors."
The captain waved it off.
"No one aside from select members of the crew has access, and they must first ask me for the key."
"What's it used for?" Thomas prodded. "How large is the compartment?"
"It's mostly for electrical matters," Captain Norwood said. "A man would need to crouch and fold himself over to pass through it. Not an ideal way to transport a body, if that's what you're getting at with this theory of yours."
I mulled that information over. Given our experience with murderers as of late, I was only too aware that a killer didn't have to be a man. "A woman wouldn't have much trouble. It would be unwise to discredit anyone at this point, sir."
Another more obvious suspect leapt out at me.
"Sebastian might also be capable of fitting through there." When they all stared at me blankly, I added, "The contortionist. I've seen him fold himself into knots." Thomas's expression was carefully blank. I would have much to explain once we were off the ship.
Miss Wadsworth, I beg your pardon, but allow me to speak plainly. There's no possible way it was used,
the captain argued.
As I have just stated, the only set of keys is in my possession, in my quarters. No one has been in there for 2 days. I'm sure of it. Unless you'd like to accuse me of depositing this limb, that panel is out of the question. You must come up with a better theory of how it came to be here.
I mentally counted to 10. Keys could be lifted, locks picked, and with an entire ship full of carnival performers who made the impossible possible, I felt the captain wasn't being realistic. Houdini was known in both England and America as the King of Handcuffs. He alone was gifted with lock-picking, squeezing into tight spaces, and making a swift escape. That thought froze all others, my heart icing over with it. I would need to make it my business to seek Houdini out next, to inquire after his whereabouts all afternoon, preferably before Uncle beat me to the task and set Liza off in a cold fury. Uncle twisted his moustache, purposely not glancing in my direction. I couldn't deny the sting I felt. He'd been upset with me plenty of times before, but he'd never ignored me while we were investigating a crime scene.
Why do you believe it was the access point for our murderer, Thomas?
I pressed my lips together, annoyed to be overlooked when I was the first on the scene. Thomas turned his attention to me. There was only a serious steadiness in his gaze when he replied,
Wadsworth, what are your thoughts?
For a moment, I said nothing. I appreciated Thomas redirecting their attention back to me, but was perturbed I required assistance in the matter at all. Setting those emotions aside for the sake of staying on task, I pointed to the bit of silk. The torn silk is one indication that someone passed through there, I said. The second is, the promenade deck has been a flurry of activity all afternoon and evening, between the crew setting the tents up and the performers and passengers milling about all night. I don't see how anyone might have smuggled a body or body parts down here without drawing some attention, unless they used a means other than the main stairwell to come down here.
Good.
Uncle motioned to the lion, which had taken to pacing around his enclosure.
Once the cage is empty, we'll know more.
He faced the captain, gaze hard.
It's your boat, Captain, but I suggest posting crew members on every deck overnight. If the murderer is still in possession of the rest of the body, he'll be desperate to rid himself of it. I wouldn't be surprised if he tried tossing it overboard in the hours before sunrise.
The captain rubbed his temples with enough force to probably give himself a headache if he wasn't already suffering from one.
I cannot have men stationed outside the first-class promenade. How will that look to well-paying passengers? This is not a workhouse, and I will not treat my passengers like prisoners. They're not being terrorized with a theatrical murder tonight, and I intend to keep it that way. I will not make them suffer.
I physically had to check to see if my head had exploded from such a ridiculous statement. Gentle prodding of my hair proved my skull was still intact, miracle of all miracles.
You cannot be serious.
Thomas tossed his hands in the air.
It would seem an awful lot better to have crew members posted along the decks than to see dismembered body parts floating about while first-class patrons made their way to breakfast and tea. Oh, look, Miss Eldridge, there's a mauled torso. Won't you pass the cream and sugar? Don't be absurd,
the captain said, aghast.
Apologies, Thomas said, not sounding at all sorry. I'm only following your lead.
Uncle took his spectacles off and rubbed out imaginary smudges.
I beg your pardon, Captain. My assistants and I mean no disrespect, but you cannot pretend as if something sinister isn't happening. Station crew outside as a precaution, or this won't be the last time we're having this conversation before reaching New York. How many bodies must we discover before some safety measures are enacted?
Captain Norwood gripped his hands tightly at his sides.
You are one of the most sought-after men in your field, Doctor. Show me what you and your assistants can do. I will post crew on the second and third class decks. You want to put your fellow gentlemen and ladies under the microscope? Then do so on your own. I will not give the command to insult them, especially not after the horrors they've been subjected to this week. There are only 2 days left at sea.
The captain turned to go, then glared over his shoulder.
After midnight, once the carnival is closed, I'll have the lion removed. Then you'll be free to investigate as you see fit. Until I send word, which may be after midnight or in the morning, you're to do as you like, so long as you don't mention this unfortunate event to anyone. I will have an evening free of murder and terror, and I will send each of you to the brig should you incite any panic.
Captain Norwood ushered us back up to the carnival and posted a guard outside the stairwell, allowing no one entry to the animal cargo. We were to wait until the show was over. Heaven forbid we disrupt the entertainment of the rich and powerful. At least, I hoped he'd send word for us after midnight. There was still a possibility he'd change his mind and not allow us back down in the crime scene until the early morning hours.
You and I will be having a serious discussion, Uncle said, expression icy as the Arctic wind blasting around us. Until then, you are to remain with Thomas. Do we understand one another?
I swallowed hard. Yes, sir. Without acknowledging me further, Uncle marched off toward his chambers. Thomas remained silent beside me, though I could tell he was battling his own feelings. I rubbed my arms, watching a crew member hoist a carrying bag up and hold it to his chest. He'd been the lucky one tasked with transporting the severed limb to the icebox. I tried not to cringe, as I thought of all the ways the scene and limb had now been contaminated. Our job had just gotten that much harder. I cannot fathom why Captain Norwood is so opposed to setting out a few night watchmen in first class, I said, as we stood at the far end of the promenade. Revelers were still enchanted by the carnival tents that had been set up, bazaar style, down the deck, laughing and milling about from one billowing striped stall to the next. Though I also noticed quite a few people who glanced over their shoulders, or didn't quite laugh as hard or smile as widely as their companions. The atmosphere was muted, almost as if it was the calm before the storm. You don't believe he's covering up for someone, do you? It's quite odd that he's less concerned over another murder. Thomas stood near me, careful not to touch my arm as he stared out at the midnight ocean. I tried telling myself I was unaffected by his rigid stance, but knew it was yet another lie I could add to the tally. Finally, he lifted a shoulder.
I must admit that I'm struggling here, Audrey Rose.
I swallowed my immediate response, knowing instantly by his use of my Christian name that we weren't speaking of the captain. A breeze whipped sea mist into my face, stinging my eyes almost as much as the sadness in Thomas's tone. I swear things will be back to normal soon. I need you to trust me, Thomas.
I do.
He sighed, then scrubbed a hand over his face. It was very un-Thomas-like. His dark hair was tousled in a way that hinted at his inner turmoil.
Which is part of the issue, I believe. What sort of bargain did you make with Mephistopheles?
I tensed, glancing around to be sure we were alone. A stilt walker in ghostly shades of white and grey tottered down the promenade, her disjointed movements an eerie sight against the darkness of the ocean. We were straying too close to the terms of my agreement, and issues with Thomas or not, I could not jeopardize Liza's welfare. I'm not sure I understand your accusation, I said, finding a spot on the railing to buff with my sleeve. I haven't accepted any deal with the ringmaster. You're losing your touch with deductions, Cresswell. A moment of silence stretched between us, heavy and uncomfortable.
Would you care to know something interesting about my deductions?
Thomas finally asked, turning to me.
Your gaze drops ever so slightly, then rises when you lie. It's your signal. I've seen you do it to Moldovanu, and to your father.
He searched my face, his own shuddering, so I could no longer read the hurt in his expression.
We promised we'd never lie to each other,
He inhaled deeply, as if giving himself a moment to collect his thoughts, or perhaps utter something he didn't wish to get wrong.
I'm sure you can find a way to be truthful to me and adhere to the terms of your bargain. We're partners.
Equals.
Let me in, so I may help.
I wanted that more than anything, and racked my brain for the 1,000th time. But I saw no way around Mephistopheles' terms. If I admitted to any collusion, it would be the end of our agreement. Liza would never give up Harry Houdini on her own, and we were running out of time. We arrived in America in 2 days, and if I lost her there, she'd be gone to us forever. I gripped my own fists, hoping the pain of my nails sinking into my flesh would keep my resolve strong. I hadn't put my gloves back on, and could feel the phantom sensation of Mephistopheles' warm skin beneath my touch. I swear that I've done nothing immoral. It was the truth, though by the way Thomas's gaze grew distant, I knew it had been another horridly wrong thing to say.
I see.
He took a careful step away, the chasm splitting my chest in half.
I hope you have a good evening.
Thomas, please, I said, stomach twisting. He shook his head, then started walking away. Wait! Without turning, he paused.
I need to get some rest before we're called back to investigate the scene. A cluttered mind makes for messy investigating. Good night, Wadsworth.
I took a few steps, and forced myself to let him go. I wasn't surprised that he'd studied me so closely while we were at the Academy of Forensic Medicine and Science. Headmaster Moldovanu was a wretched man whom I'd had to stretch the truth to from time to time, and my father, prior to his acceptance of my passion for forensic medicine, I'd had to hide my apprenticeship with my uncle. Lying had been a necessary evil, one I was not proud of. I buried my face in my hands. Warranted or not, the fact remained I had lied. Thomas had every reason to question me, though I wished more than anything he could see the truth. I'd never hurt him.
Ah, the dark prince flees on the midnight breeze.
Mephistopheles held a glass of champagne high before sipping it.
He's right, you know. You do glance down when you lie.
21. Black as his soul. Promenade. RMS Etruria. 5 January, 1889.
I spun around. Have you any honor at all? Not to mention it's creepy and not endearing when you suddenly appear like that.
Mephistopheles' mask was black as the night around us, black as his devilish soul, and perhaps as black as his eye would be if he ever sneaked up on me again while a confirmed murderer was roaming about.
He tossed back the rest of his drink and pointed to his seat, where a box of half-eaten popcorn lay next to an empty champagne bottle.
I've been sitting here. It's not my fault you're both so unobservant.
I gritted my teeth. How long have you been listening to us, then?
Long enough to congratulate you on maintaining that illusion of innocence, he said. Paltry an attempt, though it may be. Let's both agree that acting is not where your true talents lie. Though from what I've seen thus far, your sleuthing hasn't been much better. At least you are fairly pleasant on the eyes, and your dancing is surprisingly decent.
Are you here for any real purpose, or are you bored with playing parlor tricks for people? I asked, face heating. Or, most likely, are you simply enjoying the trouble you've caused between me and Thomas?
I never tire of tricks, he smiled, much like you never tire of inspecting cadavers.
That hardly gives us something in common, I said.
If you say so, he shrugged. I disagree, though.
By the by, I said, anger from his lion cage stunt blazing fresh. I don't know what the point of your demonstration was earlier, but my uncle will send me back to London if I'm caught alone with you again. If you endanger my future with forensics, I will break our agreement.
Perhaps I simply wanted to see if you cared for me, or if everything is an act. You're becoming quite the accomplished showwoman, even if you do look down when you lie.
I opened my mouth, then shut it. He gave me a knowing look.
If your uncle would send you home because of that, perhaps studying under someone else would benefit you. You might consider studying my brand of science for a while.
He waved off any further rebuttals with a flick of his wrist.
While we could chatter on endlessly over our personal dramas, I have news. Your cousin is meeting Houdini on stage after midnight. Alone. Quite scandalous for a runaway society girl traveling with a troop of misfits.
I rolled my eyes. She's been traveling with you for more than a week, and now you're concerned about the scandal?
I recall mention of your uncle threatening to commit her should she be alone with Houdini again. See? I've been sitting here, patiently waiting for you to finish with your investigation, so I might pass the news on to you immediately.
I nearly groaned. At the rate Liza and I were going, we'd both end up in adjacent cells in the asylum. What are they doing?
They're working on Harry's new performance for tomorrow's show. Very secretive, but I've seen a preview. Now that one is tricky. And death-defying. If he gets the timing down. Might just be death for whoever enters the milk can, though.
If ever there was a time to consider swimming back to England, this was it. Not only was Liza meeting with Houdini, but now she planned on assisting with another stage act after she'd sworn to Uncle she'd never do so again. The milk can? I finally asked, knowing he was baiting me into inquiring further. That doesn't sound very death-defying. What about the handcuff act? Seems he ought to focus on being the king of one thing at a time.
You didn't expect Harry Houdini to sit back, content with wearing one crown, did you?
Mephistopheles narrowed his dark eyes, as if I might have honestly hit my head on something.
Why simply be good when you can be great? If he's going to claim the name the Great Houdini, he'd better put on a show to match. People don't remember mediocre shows. To truly win the minds and memories of the audience, greatness is needed. That's what turns stories into legends and builds empires.
Finding new ways of barely escaping with one's life isn't greatness. It's foolhardy and dangerous, I said. Involving someone else in such stupidity is reckless and ought to be a criminal offense. If anything happens to my cousin, it will be his fault. Then he'll discover that kings fall like anyone else.
Ah, I must disagree with you on one thing. Greatness lies in being driven, in not settling simply because you've reached one goal. It's a state of perpetual climbing and striving to best yourself. He will be the Great Houdini one day, because he worked to earn that title, doing one impossible task after the other, never settling for simply being good.
Seems he doesn't enjoy being content with what he's accomplished.
Contentment is the root of complacency. Your cousin chooses to follow him because he is not content to sit back and be just mediocre. Does the good Houdini or the adequate Houdini have the same ring to it?
He shook his head.
I think not. Just like a good tailcoat is not as eye-catching as a great one.
Is that why you abandoned your family name? I asked, fishing. You weren't all right with living in contentment and luxury. It was just good, not great. Mephistopheles turned his attention on the well-dressed men and women walking through the carnival stalls on the promenade. There were far fewer of them, and they appeared to have lost that earlier glamour.
Why live in a cage when you can make a show of escaping from it? Tell me that life doesn't sound appealing to you.
I opened my mouth, but no words came out. Mephistopheles gave me another knowing look, but didn't press the issue.
Shall we go check on Liza and Harry?
He pulled a pocket watch out, swinging it back and forth, as if he hoped to hypnotize me from prying into his past.
In a few minutes, the curtain will drop for the public, but the private show will begin.
I glanced at the thinning crowd, hoping I'd spy one tall gentleman in particular, one to whom I'd reconcile all this as soon as I could. Unlike the wonder worker before me, Thomas seemed to have disappeared for good this evening. I gave up searching and let go. I'd see him soon enough when we investigated the lion's cage. A star shot across the sky, and I prayed it wasn't a sign of how fleeting love or friendship could be. Eerie silence greeted us in the dining saloon, now that the moonlight carnival had taken its leave of the night. My cousin and her dashing escape artist beau huddled together on stage, their heads bent in whispered conversation. My steps faltered as I watched them work out the details of the act. There was no doubt that conspiring against Liza was treacherous, conniving behavior, and I was the ringleader of the sideshow of my own creating. I hoped she'd forgive me once all was said and done, though I wasn't sure how long it would take to forgive myself. Houdini's affections might be an illusion, but she seemed perfectly content with the act. Mephistopheles whistled to Houdini, lifting a hand in greeting. A look flashed between the two young men, there and gone too fast to decipher its meaning. Perhaps it was simply a warning from the ringmaster to not fail at this new and dangerous stunt. With women murdered almost every night, and the discovery of the severed arm, his carnival was teetering on a tightrope of its own. One slip, and the entire life Mephistopheles had constructed for himself would be gone. Liza smiled and hopped off the stage, dashing up to my side in a way that made me feel all the more terrible for going behind her back. "Cousin, what a lovely surprise!" She kissed both my cheeks and gathered me into the sort of hug that lifts a person's spirits as much as their feet from the ground. "I wasn't expecting you out so late. Is Mr. Cresswell coming along too?"
"He's off brooding," Mephistopheles said as he moved toward the stage. "He's jealous of my suit. Not everyone can get away with decadent patterns and silver fringe."
She craned her neck around, searching the dark shadows of the saloon as if not believing the ringmaster. I shook my head. "He wasn't feeling quite himself and went to bed. We've had a bit of an intense evening." "Oh." Liza subtly flicked her attention between myself and Mephistopheles. I could see questions brewing behind her gaze, and knew I'd have much to answer for once we were alone. She blinked, and the suspicion disappeared. Liza read the living as well as I read the dead. "I'm sorry he'll miss this," she motioned to the stage, "but I'm sure he'll be charmed tomorrow evening when he sees it. It's truly magical. I swear there are forces at hand here, guiding Harry in an otherworldly way." I released a breath, relieved to have the conversation shift to Houdini. Captain Norwood had made it quite clear that we weren't to discuss the severed limb, and even though I trusted my cousin, I didn't want to burden her. "You know magic is simply the union of science and trickery. It's just dressed up lies."
"And there ain't no such thing as ghosts," Harry called from the stage. "Spiritualism is a hoax."
"So you keep telling me, again and again." Liza sighed in the way of the long-suffering and looped her arm through mine, leaning in as to not be overheard by the escape artist. "But it's also fun. Being caught up in make-believe is grand and romantic, and you cannot honestly say you aren't a little intrigued by the impossibility of it all. Hope is the true magic. It's the spark and draw. I know ghosts aren't real, but should I ever wish to speak to a loved one who's no longer here, I hope they are."
"Hope is a strong force," I agreed.
"Indeed. I swear I'd clutch that feeling like a tether, never letting go. Same for every one of these acts. The crowd hopes for the impossible to become possible. It shows them dreams don't belong only in our heads. With hope, those fantasies can become real. Taking hope away is like taking life from someone. We all need to believe we can achieve the impossible."
I felt a smile coming on. It was a good thing Liza had so much hope. She certainly needed to hope Uncle didn't discover she was the second young woman to disobey him this evening, else we were both doomed.
"You're not planning on actually assisting Harry on stage tomorrow, are you?"
Liza flashed a mischievous grin.
"Of course not. I wouldn't dream."
Harry clapped his hands a few times, stalling our conversation. I managed to tear my focus from my cousin and face the young man.
"Ladies, time's the only boss I obey, and he's getting impatient."
He beckoned to Liza.
"I need your help now. I've got to prove it to Mephisto that this ain't a death trap. I got the timing down good.
I offered a startled glance at my cousin. Death trap? What does he mean?
You'll see.
With a final squeeze of my hand, Liza bounded back up the stage stairs and offered a dramatic bow before disappearing behind the inky curtains. My stomach twisted. Liza had never interfered in my passions, no matter how much society looked down upon me for my scientific pursuits. During the Ripper investigation, she had been the one who'd stood by my side, needling our friends at tea when they'd made fun of Thomas, accusing him of the violent crimes because of his love of science and lack of outward emotion. She was also the one who played the role of perfect daughter, pretending to take me out to dress shops so I might actually sneak about London with Thomas to investigate. And this was how I thought to repay her. Lies and manipulation, and midnight bargains with a devilish young man. Suddenly, I was unsure I could go through with my agreement. Somehow, on this voyage, I'd turned into my father, caging those I loved instead of setting them free. It was a terrible truth to swallow, and I nearly choked on its bitter taste.
Deviousness doesn't suit you, you know, much to my dismay.
Mephistopheles flashed a smug grin.
It might be a fun mask to try on from time to time, but I suggest staying true to yourself. Honesty is best for a reason. If you'd like to revisit the terms of our agreement, say the word.
Before I answered, Liza rolled a large milk can on stage, shifting so it was dead center. Harry hopped off the stage and ran backward, a feat in itself, as he didn't plow into any tables or chairs as he peered at the contraption.
A little more to the left. Another inch. Stop.
Ain't that perfect?
He crossed his arms and studied the room.
Mark an X at each corner. Make sure it's small enough to be missed from the seats. Go on and grab the portable curtain. Everything needs to be in working order. We ain't gonna have another chance to make our first impression. This one's gotta be great.
Please, Mephistopheles added. When Harry raised a dark brow, the ringmaster elaborated.
If you bid your assistant to do something, have the courtesy of using manners. And have a care about using ain't. It's atrocious, and distracts from your skill. I ain't worried about it, he said. You shouldn't be neither. Who else can do the stunts I pull off?
He exaggeratedly glanced around.
No one, that's who. You might yank rainbow-colored unicorns from purple clouds and I'd be distracted by your horrible grammar.
Mephistopheles smiled.
If not for me, do it for the poor unicorns. Magical creatures deserve proper speech.
Harry rolled his eyes.
Last I checked, this arrangement worked because we stay out of each other's methods. I don't critique your magic or engineering. You don't comment on mine.
Let's call it a bit of friendly advice from one wonder worker to the next, then,
Mephistopheles said, drifting forward to take a seat. He spilled onto a chair and propped his feet up as if he were lounging in his private quarters and hadn't staged an attack by the lion only an hour before.
You won't win many admirers in this setting if you're rude to young ladies. Do you think Prince Albert ever addressed a crowd like that? If you're going to dress in a tuxedo and starched collar and call yourself a king, complete the gentleman act convincingly. Your New York street vernacular belongs where you picked it up, like a bad case of lice.
An awful smile twitched across the escape artist's lips.
I won't be wearing a tuxedo for this act, boss, but I'll see about adding some pleasantries for the gentry.
He turned to Liza with a deep bow.
Will you please fetch the portable curtain? We aren't going to have another chance at our milk can debut. We need to show them something with some razzle-dazzle.
Mephistopheles looked faintly amused by Houdini's proper use of manners and grammar, but didn't rise to the bait. While Houdini and Liza set up the rest of the stage to his exact measurements and demands, I allowed my mind the freedom to drift over the evening's events. I couldn't stop imagining the horror the man had endured leading up to his death. I hoped he hadn't suffered much. As I took a seat beside Mephistopheles,
I did my best to not recall how uncomfortably similar the arm in the icebox was to Jack the Ripper's laboratory and the organs he'd harvested. The ringmaster looked me over, a frown tugging his signature smirk away.
Have you been in the woman's room?